Good afternoon and welcome to Stage Talk, a weekly conversation about local theater. My name is Mark Muro.
And I'm Jean Paul, and today we're going to be interviewing two groups of people from two different plays. The first is UAA's production of The Taming of the Shrew, and later we'll be talking to Anchorage Opera about their upcoming production of The Grapes of Wrath.
And to talk about Taming of the Shrew, we have Eric Holshue and Alyssa Barnes.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. And you're here from UAA, and this is your second main stage production of the season? Third?
Second main stage production.
All right. And this is a Shakespeare classic.
Taming of the Shrew.
Yes.
And Eric, you play Petruchio.
I do.
You play Kate.
Catherine,
okay. This is very...
Kate.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking of Kiss Me, Kate.
No, I call her
good
Kate.
Good movie, good movie.
And you call her Kate.
I call her Kate.
In the show.
He does say Kiss Me, Kate, too.
Yeah, okay. All right. And this is one of the most famous couples in all of theaterdom.
Yes.
And I love it every time, but especially when Kate is kind of wins at the end. And we will just have to wait and see how this one works. This is written by
William Shakespeare wrote this, but David Edgecombe adapted it.
The director, David Edgecombe.
Yes, director.
And I've seen many Shakespeare plays adapted by David Edgecombe, and they're always very good, especially for American audiences.
Go ahead, Eric.
No, I'm just saying he makes it more accessible to the masses.
By doing what? By taking
changing
stuff out
a little bit of the language, making it so that everyone can kind of understand what's going on. He tried to keep the scansion as much as he could, so he would just change. He would keep the same syllable words and some change a little bit, just to make it a little more accessible.
Yeah, and is it more accessible for the actors as well?
I would say so.
Yes, it is.
And you're both students
at
the university. Is this the first Shakespeare play you're doing?
I actually had a small role in As You Like It. That was my first time, but this is where I actually have a substantial-sized role.
The lead role, I'd say.
Well, both of you have lead roles.
Yes.
It's my first time doing any Shakespeare on stage, but I have worked in a Shakespeare class before doing Shakespeare. But first Shakespeare role, very excited.
Well, I am looking forward to seeing you in it because I like the perkiness of you.
Yes, come see the show.
Be a great Kate.
This play as opposed to a play that isn't Shakespeare, what's the experience like? Do you have to translate it first, or does it just come natural? It's just like a regular role, or are you like going through a filter of you know, this archaic language, or is it archaic?
It is definitely. It takes several reads. Sometimes you understand exactly what you're saying, and sometimes you have to read it several times to really understand exactly what it is you're trying to get across. But overall, it was actually pretty straightforward.
I know for me, No Fear Shakespeare came into play a couple times. If you don't know,
help.
That's the Spark Notes translation into modern time of what it actually means.
Yeah.
No Fear Shakespeare.
No Fear Shakespeare, yeah.
And that's a book?
It's just online on sparknotes.com. Oh. Here's a plug for Spark Notes. You can go and just translate it into the modern
sense. What's Spark Notes?
It's just this online. A lot of people use it for college papers and essays, and
it's
gives
like the plagiarizing at a glance.
It'll give like plot overviews and character analysis and stuff on many plays online.
Yeah, books, plays, pretty much everything.
Yeah,
it's a source. Help out, you know.
Yes.
I mean, would you think that this is this like a proto-feminist text?
We've had discussions about this in rehearsal, and you know, we've kind of decided that this is a love story.
Yeah, this is more about the two of them. It's more of about a love story.
And just the natural antagonisms that will occur within a relationship, a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's, you know, there's the give and the take, and that's always going to be a power struggle in any kind of relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Huh.
For those of you who are just tuning in, this is Stage Talk here with our guests, Eric Holshue and Alyssa Barnes, talking about UAA's production of The Taming of the Shrew. And they are playing the leads, and we're getting sparks even here.
Spark notes.
Spark notes.
Spark notes.
Yeah. So, Alyssa, with this role here, is that you're, in general with the play, you're back in period costume. It's not a modern version, is it?
No, it's not a modern version. He's doing something a little different. I'm not entirely sure if I'm allowed to elaborate. I believe we're doing 1930s. So
yes.
It's not period, but it's...
It's like a screwball comedy?
Yeah. And it's actually going to be really cool. It's very...
Like
the costumes
like
and
Carol
everything.
Like Carol Lombard and Cary Grant.
Suits
and
fedoras.
Yeah, very romantic and
that makes
gangster.
Sense, too, because having been a young woman in the 30s, I understand that things weren't very much different then than they were in Shakespeare's
day. From the 1540s.
Between men and women.
Not much different.
Yeah. Well, women were smoking by then, right?
Yeah, they were.
Right. They were already. So, are there cigarettes in your play?
No, there are no cigarettes.
Okay. Oh, that's good. You don't wanna...
Catherine does not smoke.
Big example. Yeah, Catherine. So, now, is this the play? I get them all mixed up. Is this the play where Catherine has a sister in this?
Yes, Bianca.
No, Bianca, and she's also a firecracker.
Yes, in a way. Not as much as Catherine, but she's a bit of a firecracker in her own sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
kind of an undertoned firecracker.
Yeah, yeah. So, Eric, as Petruchio,
yes.
I mean, is he arrogant? Is he cocksure?
He is used to getting his way. He always wins, and there's no doubt in his mind that he will win.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
does that answer your question?
and when the play concludes, not to give away the ending, but is there a change or anything like that? Do you play it where he realizes that, you know, maybe he isn't as wonderful as he thinks he is?
Yeah, Petruchio definitely gets tamed as well by Kate. It's a mutual.
That's
mutual
true.
Deal.
The original.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. In its own sense. Yeah.
This is the Shakespeare play I think I know best.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was in this play once. I think I played the tailor.
Oh yes.
I get smacked in the face with a glove or something.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big role.
It's fun
to play about a tailor who gets slapped.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gets abused.
Yeah. And David Edgecombe directed this as well as adapted it?
Yes.
Yes.
And he's really good at directing also.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what he's known for, but I mean, when it comes to this... You know,
someone once told me that Edgecombe has forgotten more about Shakespeare than we will ever know.
He's an expert.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really interested in this updating from the Renaissance period to the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's also would be so beautiful to watch. I mean, costumes, set-wise, it's like Art Deco or whatever the mm-hmm. period was back then. It's a great teaching tool for the whole theater department.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Your students,
yeah.
You know, for all the different things that need to be done for the show. Eric, is this a big stretch for you? Because I know you a little bit. You're not like a you know... You seem to be a pretty humble guy.
Yeah.
So,
it's been fun for me to explore this. I mean, I get to, at one moment, throw temper tantrums, and then at the next moment, have a physical and intellectual sparring match with the woman of my dreams rolling around on the floor.
As it should be.
Yes, as it should be.
So it's been fun.
Well, you're not sure at that point that she is of your dreams, but someday you get there. But I want to thank you for coming, Eric Holshue and Alyssa Barnes, to talk about UAA's upcoming production of The Taming of the Shrew, which opens on Thanksgiving.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
And now we're going to talk to the Anchorage Opera, here to talk about The Grapes of Wrath, the upcoming opera, which opens this Saturday night, one performance only. And here to talk about it, we have Ricky Ian Gordon, the composer, and Sarah Jobin, the director of this opera, The Grapes of Wrath. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Ricky, what was the reason to embark upon this composition?
I got a call in about 1997 from the Minnesota Opera, and they had heard about me because at a certain point I decided that I wanted all the opera companies to know about me. I wanted to write opera. So I sent out some like little cassette tape with about 16 songs on it to all these opera companies. And meanwhile, Minnesota Opera had been sort of planning and hungry to do an opera of the Steinbeck novel. So they contacted me and they thought I was that I had the right language for the piece. And they came and met with me and I sort of lied. I was like, well, let me reread the book and I'll let you know what I think. And I had never read it, but I read it. I was about to go to California and I read it on a trip to California and back. Mm-hmm. And it was staggering to me and staggeringly current and meaningful, not in any way a period piece. So I, and the way I felt, by the way, was terrified because of its sort of iconic stature as a work of, you know, the world's favorite literature. I mean,
yeah,
it's
epic.
It's like practically, you know, all over the world, the world's best book, because of its relevance everywhere. And so, but the way I felt was I had to say yes no matter what because it was a total fate moment. It was like if you say yes, if you say no to this, how could you call yourself a composer? Like, if I'm supposed to be, like, some, like, Jewish kid from Long Island is supposed to make an opera, Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, who am I to say no? You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
And then I said yes, and it changed my whole life, really. And it really did. It took years to write. It took 2 years to get the rights from the Steinbeck estate just for the work. I was, it happened to be a moment when I was emerging a lot, like, Audra McDonald had just recorded a bunch of my stuff for Nonesuch, and then they did a CD of my work, and a lot of concerts were happening in New York of my work. The Steinbeck estate came to everything and finally granted us the rights, me and Michael Corey, the librettist. And once it was very scary even to premiere it because you definitely, I felt like if this goes badly, it's sort of over. For, you know, it's like nobody really wants to hear from you when you ruin a book like The Grapes of Wrath. But it didn't, luckily. It was like the first, I got a call from Lincoln Center like 2 days after it opened. My friend Jane Moss, she's the artistic director of Lincoln Center, and she said, have you seen Musical America? And I was like, no, what? And she said, well, it calls your opera The Great American Opera.
Right, it was a masterpiece. It was hailed as a masterpiece right after it came out.
Yeah, it was really, really, really nice. And it got a lot of press. And, you know, even if some of the press was controversial, the important thing was everybody paid attention. And we've had a lot of productions and, you know, ever since then.
And this is 2007.
Yeah, premiered February 10th, 2007.
How could he forget that date?
Yeah, exactly. It was a pretty great night. I know I'm talking a lot, but for example, there's a huge party beforehand, and everyone was there, international press, the Steinbecks, everybody, and you just felt like, you know, you're supposed to be eating dinner before, and I was thinking, at midnight tonight, like, probably it's possible that no one here is ever going to want to look at me again. And then it was really fantastic when it, you know, ended that night. It was like mayhem in the hall, so it was memorable.
Well, I understand that it is also melodic. That
yes.
The world of non-melodic music is finally beginning to disappear, and we will have melody again, which I'm old-fashioned. I like melody.
Mm.
Well, as the conductor, I can say what a pleasure it is musically to bring just really exciting music that is, yes, contemporary American opera, but it's not, as we were saying, it's not squeak squawk music at all. It's really accessible. It's tunes that you can go home singing, and it's just beautiful, lush music with gorgeous melodies.
And there's a big chorus?
There's a huge chorus. So we have 150 people on stage, the chorus, and then an orchestra of maybe 65, plus soloists out front. So we really fill the stage at the Atwood Theater. It's a 2,000-seat theater.
It's a musical spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would just say one thing about this whole thing about being melodic, that I felt an obligation. It's, to me, The Grapes of Wrath is the people's novel. And I felt strongly that I had to write an opera that the language of the opera would be like the people's opera, like something that anyone walking in off the street could grasp. So, because if it was intellectually off-putting, it would really combat the whole notion of what that book is about.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent.
There's a lot more of overtones of Broadway in this opera than, you know, than you might expect.
An American popular song from the era.
Yep. It's sort of a, it's actually, I think of it as like a trash bag of American vernacular, though hopefully not trash.
Grab bag.
For those of you who are just tuning in, this is Stage Talk here with our guests, Sarah Jobin and Ricky Ian Gordon, talking about Anchorage Opera's upcoming production of The Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah, I was listening to it on the internet last night, and just to familiarize myself, because I haven't heard it yet. I remember reading some of the reviews when it came out, you know, and it was a really big deal and everything. We're so lucky to have it here in Anchorage. How did it come about getting to Alaska? Because it hasn't been produced all that much. I mean, there was a few productions since the Minnesota run.
It
was
it's one actually of been produced. I mean, it was produced in three major companies. Then it was at Carnegie Hall. We did a concert version. It was a concert version at Disney Hall. It's been produced in three universities. It's just we happen to be in a moment when the economy does not necessarily accommodate a huge opera like this, and now all these companies are calling about a smaller version.
Well, it's thanks to Tori Allen that he brought it here. And we're doing the... Is it, we call it a concert version or a semi-staged version. So the whole concert is about an hour and a half, and it's excerpts from the opera. So it's semi-staged, but you'll hear all, it's like greatest hits.
With narration.
With narration, yeah. So you get the whole story, and it's sort of like,
It's kind of like the portable.
Yeah, it is. It's the highlights album.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's Leontyne Price and Porgy and Bess with William Warfield, that first recording.
And then a big party afterwards.
And you are narrating, I understand, Mr.
Yes, Gordon. I am. I'm Jane Fonda, because we had Jane Fonda narrating at Carnegie Hall. So I'm Jane Fonda this weekend.
And the instrumentation, you have a harmonica in here, and
we have
banjo.
A banjo in the orchestra. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's colorful.
Harmonica, banjo.
Yeah.
What fun.
You get that Americana.
There's a good
saxes.
Square dance right in the middle, saxophones. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so there's choreography?
No, but you get the sound of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. A lot of times when I hear this like American sound, it you know comes in like that WPA, like the same era, the Dust Bowl era of the Steinbeck novel. You know, those do like a Aaron Copland sound or something like that, or like Randall Thompson.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. I love all those guys.
So the instrumentation, the orchestrations, kind of harken back to that. Is there big band music in it and stuff like that too?
There is. Well, not in our version, but like, for example, the big opening to Act Two in the full version of the opera, May, the Waitress in the Diner, is sort of big band music. But the thing about the orchestra and the orchestration of this is not as much what we were thinking was epic and cinematic, which is why, by the way, the opera works best when there's slight amplification, because we wanted a big cinematic sound. Which means we wanted even the singers, the soloists, to be a little bit more. There's nothing recessive about the piece, right?
It's when like you a say lush Hollywood score.
Yeah.
And I've heard
some country fiddles in the middle.
Yeah.
And I've heard some of the singers sing at the other day at a lunch with the stars of the opera, and they're very, very good and loud. It's necessary to fill that auditorium. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. And I have to say thank you for coming, Sarah Tobin and Ricky Ian Gordon, to talk about Anchorage Opera's production this Saturday of The Grapes of Wrath.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having us.
And now here's the Stage Talk calendar. And remember, for another calendar or to post your event, go to Datebook 49 on alaskapublic.org. Here's a way to help Chugiak Eagle River Food Pantry have a blast from the past. Premier Production presents Trouble at the Tropicabana, an I Love Lucy spoof comedy, and Murder Mystery Theater at the Bear Mountain Grill in Eagle River, November 11th, 12th, 18th, 19th at 6 p.m. Tickets are available at trouble.tix.com. Bring a can of food for the Chugiak Eagle River Food Pantry or call 250-2522.
At Cyrano's, you can see Carnival, directed by Bill Fabry, I enjoyed this bright musical. Performances are Wednesday through Saturday at 7 and Sunday at 3. Note that I said Wednesday. For tickets and information for either show, call 263-ARTS or go to centertix.net.
Three Wise Moose, in partnership with Anchorage Community Theater, presents a new edition of Foreplay, four short plays by Alaskans, through Sunday, November the 13th. The plays, ranging from heartbreaking to funny, are suggested for mature audiences. The shows are on Friday and Saturday evenings at 7, with a Sunday afternoon show at 3. Call 868-4913 for reservations. And I saw these plays, Gene, and they were really good, very entertaining.
I did. I saw.
Oh, you did
too?
Okay, yeah, it was great.
At UAA Theater in the main stage, you can see The Taming of the Shrew beginning November 25th with a preview on Thanksgiving Day. Showtimes are 8 p.m. on Thursday now, Friday and Saturday, and Sunday at 3. For tickets and information, call 786-4849.
And finally, one night only tomorrow, Saturday, at the Performing Arts Center, you can see Anchorage Opera's production of The Grapes of Wrath. For tickets, go to centertix.net or call 263-ARTS.
Well, that's it for this week. If you'd like to download free podcasts of Stage Talk, visit our website at alaskapublic.org. And tune in on it next time on November 18th for Stage Talk. I'm Jean Paul.
And I'm Mark Muro for KSKA.